Paul Mayer's Children's Television Archive.
What was your first association with cartoons? How did that all come to be? Were you a cartoonist?
No, my father was sort of a pseudo vaudevillian in the 20s and 30s. He didn't do it for a living. He just did it to entertain the troop, neighborhood kids. And he taught me how to draw a little bit. Then I took it in high school, and I've always kind of just made funny faces and been able to draw. And I was an announcer at KTLA in the early 50s. And in 1956, the Popeye cartoons were made available to television, to different stations in different markets, and KTLA in this market. And the contract date for them to go on the air was October. And the man who ran the station and bought the cartoons or leased them for KTLA was Klaus Landsberg, who hired me. And he died quite suddenly in September of 1956. And he had not told anybody what he had planned to do with the cartoons in the way of a program, or you know, who was going to handle it, or if there was going to be a host or what. So naturally, since his death was rather sudden, and Paramount, which was the owner of the station at the time, hired a man from New York to come out and take over. He had a great many problems because a lot of loose ends existed, and one of them was what was going to happen to this big multi-million dollar package of cartoons. So one day I heard about auditions that were going to be held for other announcers throughout Hollywood to host the show. So I asked him if I could audition as well, and he said sure. And since I knew the station and the cameraman and the what could be done with very little money from experience from having been an announcer at the station, I quickly did an audition and got the job.
Now, you being an announcer with the station, was had you worked with radio prior to that, or how did
I was graduated from Pasadena Playhouse as a actor in 1950, and then just in 1951 and 52, beat the doors in Hollywood trying to get a job whatever I could. I did an early I Love Lucy show, I did some Space Patrol, I did some writing, some commercials, a lot of stuff for no money, naturally, some amateur shows. And then they had an audition for an announcer, and I had taken voice at the Playhouse. I don't have the world's greatest voice. I never will. I don't have any great timbre to it. But Klaus was a big fan of Stan Chambers, who he hired in 1948. And I look and sound not unlike Stan, and particularly then when we were both black-haired. And out of about 200 announcers, he picked me for. There were a lot of better announcers.
Well, your voice has a unique quality.
Yeah, it's not deep, but it does have.
It's recognizable.
Yeah, that's right, and I guess that's what they wanted.
Are you friends with Gene Autry after working at this place?
I don't even know that he knows my name. I truly don't. I don't mean to say that he's.
I was just wondering if he had any, favorite cartoons or.
No, he's never mentioned it. I met him just once when he bought the station in 1961 or 62, and mm-hmm. there was a big luncheon at the Hyatt House Hotel, which he owned at the time, and he assured everybody that they were still going to be working here for a long time, and a year later everybody was fired.
so you started this program thinking it would just last a short time, perhaps.
Yeah, nobody really
knew.
It's
kind of an experimental kind of thing.
Right.
And were you really surprised did you keep knocking wood that it was going on as long as it?
Well, I did and I didn't. I mean, I was glad to have it because, first of all, it was something where I could be seen regularly. But on the other hand, I didn't want to become a kid, quote, unquote, performer. Mm-hmm. That's why I never tried to put a show together for syndication or anything.
You still
like
wanted
that.
To be an actor all this
yeah.
time.
Yeah, and a writer, which, actually, I don't mind what I'm doing in show business as long as I'm working in show business and mm-hmm. not selling shoes or real estate
sure.
or something like that. So, even while I was doing the Popeye show the first time around for 7 years, at night I was appearing in plays and I was doing a lot of commercials and television episodes, Hogan's Heroes and Gomer Pyle's and My Mother the Car.
I saw you on Hogan's Heroes the other day.
Oh yes, they're rerunning them and they still pay it, get $82 every now and again. But that's why probably if I'd wanted to, or I mean maybe I would have been successful, I don't know, or maybe I wouldn't have. But if I'd wanted to put together a package like you know, Bob Keeshan, made mm-hmm. myself into Captain Tom, or
sure.
and gone into that area, I might have been able to make it because I was there at the right time. It was early in the game, but I didn't want to be a kids show performer.
Well,
I mean, I enjoy doing it, but my kids show is not really a kids show. Let's face it. I say whatever I like, and if the kids enjoy it, I mean, I don't try to talk above their heads, but on the other hand, I don't go coochie-coo either.
Sure. So you really didn't have any advisors at that time. You kind of just worked on your own?
Yeah, just kind of put it together myself. And there was they helped me. There was a director named Bob Davis who was the first director of my show. Yeah, he's doing a lot of religious shows back in the Midwest now. But he was very, very helpful. Bob's a smarter guy than KTLA.
That isn't the same Bob Davis I see at the end of All in the Family, is it?
No.
That's a different.
No, I'm pretty sure it's not.
Yeah. What was your show like? Can you kind of describe it? I mean, how did it start off?
Well, it was on Monday through Friday for a half hour. And there were three cartoons, 6 minutes each, being 3 and 6 being 18, and 6 minutes commercial. So that's 24. So there wasn't much time for me, as you can see. But that was okay because the cartoons are the star, let's face it. But we would shave a minute here and cut the... After they'd run 2 or 3 times, we cut the credits, so the cartoons were a little shorter. And then we had kids on the show, and each one would have a drawing board because I was a cartoonist, and I would put a line on the board, and each child would make a picture out of it, and then we'd judge it, and there would be prizes. And it's not very original, but the kids seemed to enjoy it. And at that time, kids seemed to enjoy watching kids. I think that era is... regardless of the success of Zoom and other shows where children are featured, I don't really think kids enjoy watching professional kids that much. I think the first Mickey Mouse Club was a huge success, only because there was nothing that slick on. I mean, it was just the slickest thing you ever saw outside of a movie theater. Now, it doesn't mean who cares if a kid can sing and dance and hang by their thumbs and, you know, recite... entire chapters of the Quran. I mean, it just doesn't mean that much anymore because kids are too hip.
Don't you think that in certain cases that children tuned you in not to watch other children but to watch you just because you were
probably.
Just because you were somebody real that didn't have any fake nose such as Vance would have you.
Maybe.
You were a real person, and you were a gentle person.
Maybe.
And I think that that's why I think the show was such a success for so long.
Well, I think the show was a success for so long because we had
Popeye.
The old black and white Popeye
yeah.
cartoons, which are some of the best cartoons ever made. The Max Fleischer cartoons are very, very, well, not in the professional, they're not underrated, but by the general public, you think of Walt Disney when you think of great cartoon studios, or you think of UPA, but nobody really thinks of Max Fleischer, and yet you look at them, and I've got to tell you, they're just as good or better than anything that was ever done. Hanna-Barbera is getting ready to make some new Popeyes.
Yeah, I have a question coming up about that.
Well, I'm involved in that in a peripheral way, and I've been showing them, KTLA doesn't necessarily know about it, but they will someday, I suppose. But I've been taking some cartoons and showing them, not that they couldn't get them anyway, but it's just easier. And the animators sit out there with their mouths open.
It's something very hard to reproduce because there was a certain style.
Yeah, that's the nice thing about the new cartoons. They're going to try to reproduce that period of the black and white era as much as possible. They've got the original Popeye. They've got Jack Mercer. He's going to do the voice. They've got they didn't get Olive Oil because she doesn't sound like Olive Oil anymore. But they got a great Bluto, Alan Melvin, whom you've probably seen in tons of commercials and a lot of the old Bilko show.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing Bluto. And,
now, didn't Pinto... Colvig do the original Bluto?
I don't know that he did or not. I heard that, but I really do not know.
Yeah, that's what Vance tells me.
Vance said so. He,
yeah.
He must have, yeah.
Did you have any celebrities or any cartoonists come on your show?
Mm-hmm. We had Virgil Parch, known as Vip, who does a lot of his Big George cartoon strip, and he's doing another one now.
You mean George of the Jungle?
No, Big George.
Big George.
Guy with a big nose and a mustache. He was mostly a magazine cartoonist, and now he has a comic strip called Big George. But and we had, When you say celebrities, we had, for instance, the son of Max Fleischer, Richard Fleischer, the director who directed Tora, and a lot of other shows, and he was on the show to talk about what his father was like. We had...
So he's still working locally. He's a producer?
Richard Fleischer, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the last thing I think he did that was big was... I can't think of it.
So now do you tape your programs now? Or?
Yes, we're all taped now. We tape on Tuesday evenings and show them on Sunday mornings.
And you tape one show at a time, or do you tape a few programs in a row?
We ordinarily tape one at a time. However, at the moment being in February 1978, we're taping two at a time because I won't be here all summer. I'm going to San Francisco. I'm going to be in Annie. I don't know whether you've heard that or not. I'm playing Franklin D. Roosevelt in the musical version in the West Coast Company of Annie.
Very good.
For 15 weeks there, and then at the Schubert here for like a year and a half or whatever.
So do you sing in that role quite a bit? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was originally a singer as well as an actor. I sang in the old Billy Barnes reviews, which were well remembered by the theater goers here in the 50s and 60s. That's where Ken Berry came from, and Joanne Worley, and Steve Franken, and Artie Johnson. And
so you were a dancer as well?
My dancing was minimal, but yeah. I did learn to tap dance because I was in the West Coast Company of Dames at Sea, too, mm-hmm. which played at the Las Palmas with Barbara Sharma and Ron Huseman. So I'm not a dancer, but I do sing, and I've always sung ever since I was a child, and that's what I'll be doing in Annie. And of course, FDR didn't do too much dancing, so I don't have to worry about that.
Now, now that your programs are taped, you don't have to worry about, you don't have that cold sweat that you would have with live television. Now, that
I never had a cold sweat. I guess that's because I never really thought. I mean, people say, my God, there are 800,000 people, there's kids out there. That's fine, but I don't think about that when I'm on TV. I mean, live does not, when I do a telethon, not that that's pressure, telethon is not a pressure job at all, because people tend to say, oh gosh, you know, they're doing it for charity and free, and you know, if you goof up, they say it doesn't matter. But live TV, I never got, I guess it was mic fright. I mean, just suddenly realizing that you're standing there in front of 800,000 people, I never felt that. I do prefer live to tape. I think tape is kind of a cheat. I always have. And if you make a mistake, you make a mistake. I think it's more fun that way.
Were there any really embarrassing moments because of live television that occurred?
Well, yeah.
Is there any particular ones that you'd want to share?
Well, the one involving a child, well, there's several. One was when Keds shoes, which are no longer called Keds, they're called U.S. Rubber or something, but was one of our sponsors, and they were live. And we gave, as one of the prizes on the show each day, a pair of Keds to the kid whose drawing was the best, along with the bicycle and the hostess Twinkies, dear God, and all those. And incidentally, sometime, I'm not sure, I don't think I've got it anymore, but I had a two-page... a letter from the Continental Baking Company tell you how to cut a Hostess Twinkie on camera so that it would look good.
Really?
Yeah. Two pages of typewritten, single-spaced typewritten.
You wouldn't want it to fall all over the plate.
Yes. Or make that lousy creamed filling look lousy. Anyway, the kid had won the prize, and I said, and here is your bicycle and your da-da-da and your da-da, and here from the kids people is a pair of kids. Sneakers. And he said, they hurt my feet. And I said, well, of course, any shoe will hurt your foot if it's too small, but you can be sure that the folks that sell Keds will make sure that your shoes fit because they have the best shoe salesman in town. And I wiggled my way out of it, but I felt very peculiar. And afterwards, when we were off the air, the mother and father of the child were very, apologetic, and they said, we're so sorry and everything, but it turns out the child was allergic to canvas and could not wear canvas shoes. And so that's why he said it. And he was being absolutely truthful. But because he was being truthful, fine, let him say it.
I guess that's where your coolness pays off.
I guess. Yeah. I guess.
Well, did you make a lot of personal appearances? Well, you know, did you take these products along? Did you talk about these products when you made personal
appearances? No, not at personal appearances. I would take autographed pictures along,
mm-hmm.
and I would take prizes that I purchased. I didn't want to... Now that's not technically true. There was an outfit in town, Adolph Wendland and Company, who used to provide prizes for every show, and they provided some prizes, and I didn't have to mention their name. In other words, it wasn't payola or anything
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the only thing that the way it did them good is they could say to a prospective client, they say, we give away our shows on Tom Hatton's Popeye Show, and it's the top-rated show in town from 6 to 6:30. But the fact that he could say that had nothing to do with the fact that I didn't mention his name on the air. So I would take some prizes along, but mainly my show, when I did personal appearances, and this is not to belittle Vance or Engineer Bill or any of the rest of the guys,
mm-hmm.
or John either, they mostly had kind of a drawing from a chess type thing for their big high point of their show.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe they did a little magic, maybe they did a little puppeteering or something.
Ended up with the grand prize.
Yeah, but we never did that. I did a half hour chalk talk, which used to be I would draw the characters on my show and the characters on other shows. And in fact, I still occasionally do
that. That would always be a good lead-in to a cartoon for you, to be able to draw what's coming up next.
That helped a lot. Well, I used to, back when the cartoons were fresh and kids didn't know them frame by frame, I would draw on my drawing board the first frame of the cartoon, and the camera would come over my shoulder into my picture, and then we'd roll the film, and it would appear to come to life.
Fantastic.
That was back in the 50s.
A lot of work.
It was really, but it wasn't really, because I would go over and screen the cartoon in the afternoon, and we'd have a stop thing on the projector, and the picture would be there, and I would sketch it out very roughly on a little piece of paper about 3x5, and then I would take it back to the drawing board and pretty well block it in, and then be finishing it when the kids came. And it was never an exact, I didn't try to pretend that it was an exact frame. In fact, it wouldn't have been as much fun if we'd had just a picture of a picture, my version of it coming to life.
Sure, it really shows what a cartoon is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It makes a little more understanding to the small viewers. Tell me, when you made these personal appearances, you mentioned earlier that you really weren't striving to be a children's celebrity. Did that ever get to you after a while? I mean, did you get tired of walking into a store and the children saying, there he is?
No, I didn't get tired of it at all. When I say I didn't want to become a children's performer, that doesn't mean that I was looking down on children performing or other children performers or my own job. It's just that I thought it would be a lot more fun to be on stage. If I could, do the rest of my life, do nothing but stage work, I would love that. I never made another movie or television film or commercial. It wouldn't bother me. I mean, they pay nicely, but
mm-hmm.
I really prefer the stage. I prefer the live. And so that's the only thing that I was afraid of is if I got completely identified with a children's show, then that would prevent my doing the other. But as I have told you before, I did a lot of stuff at night. I did a lot of summer stock. I did a dozen of plays. Of 8 or 9 other actors and I opened our own theater in the Valley called The Showplace.
Hmm.
And I was with them for 5 years doing big parts and little parts and directing and painting sets and, it was just, I loved being recognized. I still do. Everybody,
mm-hmm.
every actor does. So he'd be a liar if he told you he didn't. And plus which, I didn't do markets in school and supermarkets and fairs nearly so much as I did schools. I did, I must have done over 600 or 700 appearances for PTAs in schools.
Now, so what was it, the PTA paying you?
PTA sold tickets, and then they would split whatever was made. That is an arrangement you make with the Board of Education. I had to go to the Board of Education and preview my show.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine you may have had to
mm-hmm.
do that,
sure.
too. Then they give you a rating of excellent or good or whatever. And then it's renewed as long as there are no major complaints. Once in a while, a blue nose principal will say, he said darn or something.
Mm-hmm.
But the way, as you know, that you get paid at a PTA is they sell tickets. You cannot charge a minimum. In other words, if they charge 35 cents a ticket and you have a very small house and you end up with $40 to split between the two of you, you take your $20 and go. Other places you'll make, you know, a very good, nice, particularly if you do three schools on a Saturday, which I used to do when I was my busiest period.
Yeah, Vance told me he did 8 shows in one day, starting in San Diego and ended up in San Bernardino.
Yes, oh yeah, sure.
Nice. You did things mm-hmm. similar to that. Yeah.
Particularly during the holiday periods. You get out at 8 in the morning and because at 8 in the morning, there's nobody, not going to be anybody at a supermarket, but there's going to be kids in hospitals and stuff. They'll be there, and they'll be just as great an audience at 8 or 9 and 10 in the morning. And then 11 o'clock, when the supermarkets begin to fill up, or the school carnivals begin to open up and the rides start and everything, during holiday periods, both in the Easter and Christmas and Thanksgiving, those periods, you literally would work.
Did you have a helper that went along with
no,
you?
No, I always did it myself.
You drove yourself.
Most everybody.
You just brought an easel. Is that
mm-hmm.
was your?
I didn't bring an easel. Just my drawing board and my chalk.
Well, that's easy.
Mm-hmm. And autographed pictures and my sailor hat.
So, how did the program eventually get to the point where it went off the air? How did that happen?
Well, this was 1964. We'd gone on in '56. And about 1962, 63, the ratings began to sag mm-hmm. appreciably because, let's face it, the cartoons were all old, old, old. Then we got some new cartoons. Got the new.
You feel that they had seen them all.
Yeah. Even though the kids, there was a new audience every year or every couple of years, they were just too familiar.
How many cartoons did you have here?
We had about 250.
That's quite a bit.
And then they bought like 100 new ones made by King Features, new Popeyes, which were limited animation and so terrible, and please don't quote me, but they were not up to the standard
I've
of the others.
I've seen them.
And you know how terrible they are.
Yeah.
Well, they're still on Channel 13.
Sure.
But they didn't get any ratings, even though they were new. And then rock and roll came in, and pretty soon Bandstand, you know, the teenage Bandstand shows took over. There was a show called Hullabaloo. There was a show called Shindig. There was a show called the one where the kids went all over the country, Action, where the action is.
Yeah.
Suddenly all the time periods in the afternoon, at least in the L.A. market, which were kids' shows, became shows for teenagers and preteens, but kids,
mm-hmm.
you know, watching other kids dance and stuff.
Yeah, locally there was Sam Riddle, and that was a little later, but Lloyd Thaxton was
mm-hmm.
one, I
sure.
guess.
So those, our shows, our types of shows went off. And in fact, I was very relieved, really. I was not upset about it at all.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I saved some money and didn't have to worry too much for a while. Pretty soon the money ran out, then I started worrying again.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a family?
No, I'm single.
You're single. Now, what was it like? What was it like being off the air? I see an article that mentioned that you did a lot of commercials and jazz concerts. Tell me a little about the jazz concerts.
Well, my main performer that I produce in jazz concerts here in San Francisco and Seattle is a black singer pianist named Bobby Short, who is an East Coast citizen, and he spends about 9 months of the year at a hotel in New York called the Cafe Carlyle. If you've seen the Charlie commercial, and you've seen the black singer pianist,
mm-hmm.
says, Charlie,
mm-hmm.
Charlie,
yep,
that's
yep,
Bobby
yep.
Short. And during the early 50s, when I was just getting started in television, he was very popular out here in supper clubs, places like the Macombo and the Interlude and places which no longer exist, little intimate clubs which had as their clientele the very chic, the very smart people, a lot of the movie crowd and so forth. Then he went to Paris. He lived here about 4 or 5 years, and I got to know him very well. He went to Paris, then he went back to New York and opened his own club, and then he went into the Hotel Carlyle in New York, which is the smart hotel on Madison Avenue. Jackie Kennedy lives at the Carlyle Hotel. Adlai Stevenson lived there when he lived in New York. A great many celebrities of that type, not Goldie Hawn, and although I like Goldie, but it's a really rich man's type milieu. And Bobby has that following. He has a very sophisticated following. He's called the last of the great troubadours. He does all the songs of Cole Porter and Gershwin and Rodgers and Hart. And he would come back occasionally in the 50s and 60s after moving from here and play a nightclub. But the nightclubs began to deteriorate in such a fashion. And pretty soon all the clubs where he could play no longer existed. He couldn't go into the Palladium. He couldn't play the Coconut Grove. It was too big. And all the little clubs were no longer existent. So he didn't play here for about 4 or 5 years. Well, in 1970, it suddenly occurred to me that why didn't someone present him in concert? Get all his fans. If you could get them all together on one night, you might have something.
Sure.
So we rented the Wilshire Ebell, which you may know. It's over on Wilshire Boulevard. Seats about 1,100 people. And everybody told me I was crazy. They said there'd be 45 people in the house, you know. We had 900 people. And so the next year we presented him again in 71. 72, we presented him at the Schubert in Century City, or 73. And then the last 4 years, I presented him at the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion. He will be there next March 6th, 8:30.
So you're moving up.
Yes. Yeah. And I also presented, he plays piano and sings and has a trio. He also has an orchestra. Because I could never present rock performers because I don't like rock, and I would have no interest in it, and I wouldn't know a good rock performer, if there is such a thing, from a lousy rock performer. Please don't fool me.
Now, you were off the air for quite a while,
right.
and you did these jazz concerts, and I see also that you did game shows. Did the game shows, was that easy for you to do through your association with working with this studio? Did you start writing for game shows that were...
No, I started working on game shows. The first game show was called Movie Game, which was a game show about old movies. And it was produced by a producer who now does the People's Choice Awards and many other shows called Bob Stivers. And the way I got into that is Bob Stivers was looking for a house to rent for 3 months, and I was going to New York for 6 months. And I had my house on the market for a short-term rental because I have a kind of a nice house up above the Sunset Strip with a pool and a nice view, and it's very small, and it's just what he wanted.
A bachelor pad,
yes, the old cliche. But so Bob Stivers rented that, and it's just as I was taking his check and preparing to move out, I said, "What are you doing out here?" He was a New Yorker, and he said, "I'm getting ready to produce a game show." And I said, "Oh, what show?" And he said, it's about old movies. And I said, "Oh, I'd love to be a contestant." Mm-hmm. He said, "Well, you can't be a contestant, because if I know anybody, obviously they could not be a contestant." He said, "However, he saw my 3 Emmy nominations on the wall, and he said, "What do you write as well as perform?" And I said, "Yes, I've written a lot of stuff." He says, "Well, I'm looking for writers for my show." So I said, "Well, why don't I write some stuff, and you look at it, and if you like it. So he did. So I went down as became a writer on the Movie Game, and was with them for 2 years. And then when Movie Game went off, Split Second came on over at Monty Hall's company. And some of the people that were on Movie Game moved over there, and they said, "We need a guy who can do this type of question." And they said, "Tom Hatton is perfect." And I went over, and I was.
Funny how things work out.
Yeah. So it's like anything else. Once you get in the... one field, one particular area, you find that if you're any good at all, everybody else suddenly knows about it. Because after Movie Game came Split Second, and then the Magnificent Marble Machine, and then Bobby Van's Comedy the Fun Factory. And
now, did you write the gags that would?
No, I wrote the questions. I write, name.
That was
three
a good. That was a good show. I enjoyed.
Which
that.
One?
Bobby Van.
Yeah, it would. Should
I really
have been
didn't know much that much about Bobby Van until I saw the show, and then I did a little research into his history, and I remember seeing that one clip of him dancing. He was dancing on his. He went on his knees or something like that.
Well, maybe you saw That's Entertainment
too,
when he did that scene from Our Small Town Girl, where he bounced all
that's
over
right.
town.
He was bouncing.
Fabulous. That's a great number.
That was a great number.
He also was in.
the revival of No No Nanette that brought Ruby Keeler back into prominence. And she was so great that he kind of got lost in the shuffle, but he was marvelous in it too.
Yeah.
I saw him just the other day. He's going to make a pilot for a new game show I may be running.
So you were away from the program, the Popeye program, for about 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
And right before you were put back on the air, were there people that came up to you and said, "We've got to get you back on. I remember you when." And
no.
There was.
No.
Were there anybody that wrote the station and said,
no,
"We have to put him back on"?
No, that is a myth. People do not write stations up, particularly in local areas. Don't, for instance, all the Star Trek jazz that you read. Sure, I mean, there are Star Trek clubs, and mm-hmm. those people
yeah.
write.
Yeah.
And Dinah Shore has several fan clubs, and they write. But the general public doesn't give a damn who's on and who's off. I'm sincere. I mean, you're a fool if you think that the public is sincere or and it doesn't mean that they're cruel or that they're unfeeling or that they are hoping you'll starve to death. It isn't that. It's just that there's too much other stuff. First of all, there's only so many dollars that you can spend on entertainment if you're the average man. And that's why it's so bloody difficult to open a new restaurant, a new anything where money is involved, because that means that money has to come from somebody else or some other place. Well, if I go off the air, so what? They'll move to, there's six other channels. If it were, you know, my mother might be upset, but a lot of people, there were maybe 10 letters after Popeye went off. But, they, you know, people weren't begging me to come back on what was apparent to KTLA was they had all these Popeye cartoons, which they'd not run for, as you say, 12 years or 13 years. They were still paying for the use of them and getting no runs out of them. So they asked me if I would do a two-hour, quote, special, unquote. Or, no, they said they wanted to do a special about the Popeye character and how he evolved from the comic strip into the movies and then onto television. And it was simply a crutch, a gimmick, a way to run some cartoons and get some runs out of them. And they figured that in these 12 years since I've been off, a whole new generation of kids had grown up that had never seen a Popeye cartoon, the good Popeye cartoons, the ones we talk about. And I seemed like the logical person to do it. So since the people that ran the studio were still the same people that were running it when I went off, Jerry Birdwell, the general manager, called me and said, would I be interested in hosting this two-hour special and writing it and all that? And I did it. And the ratings were fantastic. They put it on 6 o'clock at night on a Sunday night in 1975. And Sunday night, 6 to 8, was kind of like our family hour. They put the Danny Kaye movies in and the Wilderness Adventures and the G-rated movies and things. Well, they tucked this two-hour special in and promoted it pretty well, and it got more a higher rating than anything else in the whole year. So they said, hey, hey, and then they ran it again, rerun, and it got a good rating the second time around, so they decided to bring it once a week back. Here I am.
Do you think that Popeye is a good example for children? I mean, do you ever feel any feelings about that?
No. I mean, yes, I do think he's a good example for children in that... He's, well, it's a little difficult to know which Popeye we're talking about.
Yeah, because Popeye was a war Popeye. And...
Yeah, he's been bastardized to a certain extent, but the Popeye that came from the comic strip is a kind guy. I mean, he's got the muscles and he's got, but he, you know, he's good to dogs and cats and children, and he doesn't lie and he doesn't swear and he doesn't cheat and he never starts a fight and... I don't think kids consciously think of that, but I don't. I think they know that he's generally a hero in the sense that Superman is a hero. You don't think Superman is being a mean guy, and you don't think of Popeye as being a mean guy. Sure, he fights, but he doesn't instigate fights, and he just, you know, Olive Oil is a ninny, and she gets herself in trouble, and he has to get her out. That's one of the things that's puzzling them over at CBS. What are they going to do for storylines for the new cartoons, because there's so many pressure groups now that
you know. I just met with Faith Heckman.
Yeah.
You know, in her office, and mm-hmm. I interviewed her for this book.
Oh, you did.
And I, at that time when I was interviewing her, the vice president that came into her office with a storyboard on Popeye, And he said, I don't like this part, that it goes like this. And she says, well, what would you rather have? And he says, well, I don't know. It needs some kind of gimmick after he falls through the clouds. Maybe he could pull out an umbrella and fall. And she says, well, I don't like that idea. What if he bounced off of something once he hit the ground? I mean, it was really surprising to me to see that that the development was being changed right there in that office, you know, of the program director. But you mentioned it was going back to Hanna-Barbera. You said you had some association. Did they came to you?
Yeah, Hanna-Barbera called and asked if I would be interested in being involved in the new 48 cartoons that they're making, either as a, not as an animator, because I'm not an animator per se, but as, you know, a guy who supposedly knows a great deal about the character, working with Hanna-Barbera to show their people what the character is like, and also to work on some of the storylines. Well, some of my storylines, that doesn't happen to be one of them, the one you mentioned, because I didn't have him falling out of an airplane, but some of mine are at CBS now, and as soon as they are approved, then I'll flesh them out into scripts. But, and that will be just between now and May 15th or so. I told him I wouldn't be available after that, because then I'll be rehearsing for any.
So it really must be an honor for you after working with Popeye, yeah, after all of these years, to have really some part in
If they were going to make another schlock bunch of them like King Features and Jack Kinney did, then I would say pass. I don't need that. But as long as they are trying to do some of the old, get the old flavor into them, of course. In fact, I saw some of the backgrounds they're going to be using. Even they don't have any stories yet, the backgrounds are identical to some of the black and whites of the 30s. The old
They really got elaborate.
Yeah.
They had really a super, like I remember one where the boat builder was one a good example of the quality. Remember the ones where the father took one side of the boat and Popeye took other side of the boat?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was an example of their really fine quality. Now, Max Fleischer and Dave Fleischer were the... Now, right. Dave Fleischer kind of followed his brother as a helper?
Well, there were four of them. There were four Fleischer brothers. In fact, there's a great book which you should get called Fleischer's Story, if you're interested.
Oh, yes.
It costs $12.50, and it is a bargain. It is a terrific. It tells all about the Fleischers. They also did, as you probably know,
Betty Boop.
Betty Boop and Gulliver's Travels. And
I saw some terrific posters down at Bennett's Bookshop of those Gulliver Travel posters.
Mm-hmm. And Collector's Bookshop has some too. Anyway, there were four Fleischer brothers. Max was the one whose name was used most often. He's dead, of course. Dave is still alive, lives at the Motion Picture Country Home, and I think the other two are gone too.
Now, they started way back in 1911, and they were based in Florida?
Yeah, not at that time. The Popeyes were made in Florida. They built a special studio for the Fleischers in the 30s, and 1934, something along in that. And they flourished until the war came, and then...
In 1942, they folded, and then it was picked up again by Famous Studios. Right. Now, I won't quote you on this, but was that an example of their poor quality? Was that...
No, but the Famous weren't bad. They didn't have the same flavor that the old ones had. They went to color, and they were a lot slicker, and the music was a lot jazzier, and the characters were streamlined, and they were still amusing, but they weren't the real Popeye the way I see it. In fact, someone has said, if you see a cartoon and the doors don't open, it's not a good one.
At the boat.
Mm-hmm.
Because
those were the old Fleischers.
And those are the ones you play now?
Yeah, we also have the Famous Studio ones too, but I sneak as many of the old ones in as I can.
You like to use the old ones as much as possible. Now, you mentioned earlier some of the voice people. Are you friends with any of these people? Are they local? Or you mentioned the original Popeye.
Mercer isn't local. He's local at the moment because he's doing the new series. Mm-hmm. Mae Questel played Olive Oil. Do you know who Mae Questel is?
No.
Now,
is she the one that does the Scott Towels commercials?
May. That is Mae.
Now, you mentioned that she didn't sound too much like her anymore.
That's what they tell me.
I think she does.
Well, I do too. But
I think that's how I recognize her. That's Olive Oil Hill's voice, you know.
No, they had her send a tape, and I did not hear the tape, so I cannot swear it's gospel, but they told me that they wanted somebody with a little younger sound.
It must have been a blow to her.
I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe so, maybe not. And Mercer sounds exactly like Popeye, the old Popeye, where he mutters to himself. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, how old is he now?
I don't know. He's going to be on the show next week. I'll ask him.
He's going to be on the show next week.
We're taping a week from tonight. He'll be on the taping, and it'll be on sometime in April.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever have a studio audience?
No, if you'd like to come down.
I'd love to come down.
Okay, sure.
And just to kick back, that would be maybe a good time to take some pictures for the book.
That's all right.
That would be a super time to have a picture of you and him together.
Okay, absolutely.
If any guest you would have, that would be the one.
Well, if he's not coming, I'll let you know, but I saw him today, and I asked him either tonight or a week from tonight, which would be more convenient, and he said a week from tonight.
All right.
So feel free.
Can I call you and just double check on
that? Absolutely.
And just to remind you?
Sure.
I think we're about finished here.
Okay.
But thanks. Thanks
very much. Not at all. Welcome. I hope it's a big success.
Oh, it will
be. It will be out for what, a couple of years or so? Because we are, you know, Hollywood is not the end of the world.
I know.
What about the guy in New York?
That you did local, and you saw a part of my list. That's mm-hmm. kind of what my weeks look like. I do a few interviews, and then I go back and I do some typing, and then I go back and do some interviews. And I continue to do my puppet shows at the Renaissance Pleasure Fair.
Oh, yeah?
Continue to work there. And I'm continuing to supply Magic Mountain.
Now, what is it you say you supply for Magic Mountain? I was there the other day.
Paul Mayer's Children's Television Archive.